Welcome to this AAT podcast on the Construction Industry Scheme, where I will provide an update on the not-so-new Construction Industry Scheme, which is now into its third year of operation. The new scheme was launched on Good Friday, the 6th of April 2007, as the third Construction Industry Tax Deduction Scheme. And that is the important point to be remembered, especially for our contractor clients. That is that it is a tax deduction scheme. And of course, any failure to deduct and pay over the correct amount of tax can leave our clients in a difficult position. The first Construction Industry Tax Deduction Scheme was introduced a long time ago in 1972 to combat the avoidance of income tax and national insurance contributions by a self-employed workforce that was paid gross, and many of whom were not declared in their income and paying UK taxes. In the 21st century, we still have a lot of migrant workers coming to the UK to work in the industry where this exposure could still exist if it were not for the tax deduction scheme. That original scheme and the current scheme were therefore designed to ensure that a contractor would make a deduction of tax when making a payment to a subcontractor under a contract relating to what is known as construction operations. The tax deducted is meant to cover the subcontractor's liability to income tax plus any Class 2 and Class 4 national insurance contributions that may be due from the subcontractor. The contractor, who is the person making the payment for the construction work, is responsible for making the correct amount of tax deduction and for paying over that amount of tax to HMRC, normally on a monthly basis. Contractors are often limited companies, but could also be a partnership or a sole trader. It might also be a joint venture company involving two construction businesses, or perhaps a construction business and someone providing the finance for the joint venture. The contractor is not always a construction company and could be another business, such as a property developer, who engages a main contractor as subcontractor to do the work. The subcontractor might be a limited company, a partnership, or a sole trader, and may then further subcontract the work to other businesses or individuals further down the supply chain. Each of these businesses have to register for the Construction Industry Scheme and operate the scheme as it relates to their business. Subcontractors have always been able to apply to HMRC and the old Inland Revenue to be paid gross without having deductions from the payments they receive. Such an application is subject to satisfying certain conditions for exemption from deduction, which is now known as gross payment status. Obtaining and retaining that gross payment status is one of the major concerns of AAT members, and rightly so, which is why I will discuss that in this podcast. The first two schemes relied on exemption certificates as proof that tax deductions were not necessary, also monthly vouchers as evidence of the payments, and tax deducted, and there were also annual CIS returns. These have all gone under the current scheme and have been replaced with two rates of tax deduction, a verification process to establish the tax payment status of the subcontractor, and monthly CIS 300 returns to replace the old vouchers and the annual returns. HMRC has introduced a new penalty structure to enforce compliance with the new CIS rules, and AAT members working in the construction industry scheme and advising clients in the industry need to be mindful of these penalties and their likely effect on a subcontractor's gross payment status. There is a fixed penalty of £100 per month charged for each 50 subcontractors or part batch of 50 subcontractors, which means that a contractor with 1 to 50 subcontractors will be charged £100 per month, and that's increased to £200 for 51 subcontractors up to 100, and so on. These penalties are charged for the failure to file a return by the 19th of the month deadline and will be applied for up to 12 months for each return that remains outstanding for that length of time. Where a return is outstanding for more than 12 months, an additional automatic final late filing penalty will be charged, and this will not exceed £3,000. And it is based on the number of offences within the 12-month period prior to submission of the late return. If a contractor submits a monthly return that is incomplete or incorrect, HMRC may charge penalties not exceeding the difference between the amount returned and the amount that should have been returned, where it is believed that the error or omission has been caused by negligence or intent on the part of the contractor. That leaves the situation open to claim such things as reasonable excuse. Incomplete or incorrect returns include persons or payments omitted from the return, persons or payment incorrectly entered on the return, failing to make a declaration in respect of verification or employment status, and incorrectly making a declaration in respect of verification or employment status. If a contractor fails to produce records related to payments made under the scheme when asked to do so, penalties of up to £3,000 may be charged for that failure. Contractors may be charged an initial penalty not exceeding £300 and daily penalties not exceeding £60 per day if they fail to give statements to subcontractors registered for payment under deduction, and a penalty not exceeding £3,000 if negligently or deliberately providing correct information in such statements. It is also an offence for a subcontractor knowingly to make a false declaration or to submit any false documentation in order to register for gross payment or for payment under deduction. That offence may result in a penalty of up to £3,000. AAT members are telling me about clients that are not registered for CIS and where HMRC is charging large penalties even where there is no tax outstanding. This is a problem which is countrywide, and HMRC has accepted that the rules currently provide sometimes for disproportionate fixed penalties. HMRC proposes to place a cap on these penalties, providing that the failure to register and submit the returns was not deliberate on the part of the contractor. Many contractors are also subcontractors who receive payments for construction operations from other main contractors. And what may be of greater concern for many of them is the potential failure of the compliance test, which could result in the loss of their gross payment status. The cash flow effects could be very difficult for businesses. A new feature of the current scheme is the automated scheduled review, or the Tax Treatment Qualification Test, TTQT, of a subcontractor's level of compliance in the previous 12 months. This is something that's been happening since November 2007 and means that every single gross payment status subcontractor will be reviewed automatically by HMRC at least once a year. A gross payment subcontractor will fail the test if any of the following criteria are present during the 12-month review period. If HMRC has received four or more contractor monthly returns late. If one contractor monthly return is late by more than 28 days. If there are four or more late payments of CIS deductions or PAYE and NIC deductions. Or only one late payment of PAYE or CIS deductions when it's more than 14 days late. One payment of self-assessment tax that is more than 28 days late will result in a failure, as will one payment of corporation tax that is more than 28 days late. Another failure would involve at the date of the review where there is outstanding an overdue employer's end of year return form P35, or a self-assessment return. The message to contractors and subcontractors receiving payments for construction operations is to be careful to avoid being charged late filing penalties and to constantly monitor the level of compliance. Accurate and timely completion of the CIS 300 monthly returns is important, but the compliance responsibilities extend beyond the business to its proprietors, so in other words, its directors or partners, and to their individual tax affairs too. First of all, HMRC insists that the scheme only applies to workers who are self-employed and that it does not apply to employees who are employed under a contract of employment. Those workers should be paid through the payroll and their earnings should be subjected to pay-as-you-earn and Class 1 NIC deductions. It is important that before making the first payment to an individual worker for work that is within the construction industry scheme, the contractor must first establish whether that worker is employed under a contract of employment or engaged under a contract for services, which would be self-employment. We have to remember that contractors have to make a declaration on the monthly returns, which says that the employment status of each individual included on the return has been considered and that payments have not been made under a contract of employment. The scheme is a tax deduction scheme, and there are now two rates of tax deduction. Firstly, the standard rate of deduction, currently 20%, and the higher rate of deduction, currently 30%. We then have a verification process introduced to determine the correct rate of tax deduction to be applied to the payments made to subcontractors. Contractors must not make the first payment to a subcontractor before that subcontractor has been verified. Otherwise, how does the contractor know whether or not to deduct tax? This is not too arduous because a contractor does not have to verify any subcontractor that was included on a scheme return in the current tax year or the two previous tax years. By way of an example, if a contractor was engaging a new subcontractor in August 2009, someone who had never been engaged or paid before, they obviously have to verify that subcontractor before making a payment to them under the scheme. Another example of a contractor who re-engages a subcontractor in August 2009, having last paid that subcontractor in October 2008, well, then the contractor doesn't have to verify the subcontractor because they were paid within the previous 2 years. The verification process is straightforward and involves contacting HMRC either by telephone on its helpline 0845 366 7899 or by carrying out the verification process online via the internet using electronic data interchange or a third-party software. The contractor will have to confirm that a contract has been agreed with the subcontractor or that a tender for work has been accepted. The contractor will then have to provide HMRC with its own identification details and with the subcontractor's identification details. The identification details will depend on the type of business. A sole trader will have to provide the name, the unique tax reference number, and a national insurance number. Partnership will provide the firm's name, the partner's name, and the unique tax reference number. And if it's a company partner, the company registration number. And if the subcontractor is a company, it will be the company name, unique tax reference number, and company registration number. It is important that contractors establish these details at an early stage when the subcontractor is first taken on and before having to make the first payment. If the details don't match, the subcontractor would have to be asked to reconfirm their details. HMRC will issue a verification number, which will be the same number for each subcontractor verified at the same time. The contractor has to keep a record of those verification numbers for future purposes. And if the subcontractor is paid under deduction of the higher rate of 30%, a special unique reference number will be provided by HMRC and that has to go down onto the return. Once a contractor has verified a subcontractor or made a payment to the subcontractor, if verification wasn't necessary, the contractor can continue to pay the subcontractor in the same way until HMRC tells them about any change in that subcontractor's status. Whilst deductions only have to be made from that part of the subcontractor's payment that does not represent the cost of materials, deductions do have to be made from the balance of the payment unless the subcontractor has been registered for gross payment status. One of the recurring problems picked up by HMRC compliance officers is the failure to make a deduction when it is required. By verifying the subcontractor at the appropriate time, the contractor should establish whether a deduction has to be made or not. Once it's established that a deduction has got to be made, you then have to look at the makeup of the payment to the subcontractor. Deductions have to be made from travel and subsistence expenses. Any travel and expenses, including fuel costs and subsistence paid to the subcontractor, must be included in the gross amount of the payment and the amount from which the tax deduction is made. Contractor will need to keep a record of the gross payment amounts so that they can enter these on their monthly returns. No deduction has to be made from materials, consumable stores, plant hire, and the cost of manufacture or prefabrication of materials. But again, records have to be kept of all this information. Another problem that's currently being picked up by HMRC compliance officers is where the cost of materials is being overstated. The guidance from HMRC quite clearly states that the contractor can ask, and indeed should ask, the subcontractor for evidence of the actual cost of materials or make a fair estimate of the cost if that's not been provided by the subcontractor. The contractor has always got to check this out because the contractor could be liable for the tax that hasn't been deducted. The contractor must provide a written statement to every subcontractor registered for payment under deduction, not later than 14 days after the end of the tax month. As an example, payments made between the 6th of August 2009 and the 5th of September 2009 fall within the tax month of August, and the required information must be provided not later than 14 days after the end of the tax month, in other words, by 19th of September 2009. This is one of those problems areas that HMRC are picking up, where some contractors are simply not giving out payment statements, and as I've said earlier, there are penalties for failing to give out payment statements. There is no official form, although HMRC's CIS website now does have an example of a form that can be printed off and used. Also, Appendix E of the CIS 340 booklet does have an example of a payment statement there. And providing the contractor provides the basic information, any format can be used. A subcontractor that obtains gross payment status will continue to be treated as gross paid until HMRC has notified the contractor of a change. The regulations require that HMRC must notify a contractor that a subcontractor's payment status has changed from gross to deduction, or indeed from deduction to gross, if that subcontractor was included on a contractor's return in the current or two previous years. This means that the contractor can assume that a subcontractor continues to be gross paid until told otherwise. If a subcontractor's payment status is changed from gross payment to payment under deduction, or payment under deduction to gross payment, HMRC will write to the subcontractor first and then to the contractor. The subcontractor has 90 days to appeal against the notice of change from gross payment to deduction, and there could be a delay before the contractor is told if an appeal process goes forward. But the important thing is for the contractor clients that they have to deal with the letters from HMRC notifying change in payment status Otherwise, when they take on a subcontractor that's been used before, they'll have to verify the subcontractor each time. The golden rule is, if in doubt, verify. If a subcontractor tells the contractor that their payment status has changed from deduction to gross, it would be silly to just accept the word of the subcontractor. The easiest thing to do would be to telephone HMRC or go online and verify the subcontractor again. Next, I want to look at monthly returns and the declarations, because one of the key obligations imposed on contractors in the new construction industry scheme is the submission of the CIS 300 monthly returns. A return has to be made to HMRC in a document or format provided by HMRC. In other words, large employers, large contractors cannot use substitute documents. Each month, contractors have to submit a complete return of all payments made to all subcontractors within the scheme in the preceding tax month, regardless of whether the subcontractors were paid gross, paid under net deduction of the standard amount, or net of the higher deduction amount. The return must include a declaration by the person making the return, in other words, the contractor, A, that none of the contracts to which the return relates is a contract of employment, B, indicating whether he has complied with the requirements of Regulation 6 for verifying the subcontractor, and C, that the return contains all the information, particulars, and supporting information required by the regulations. Returns have to reach HMRC within 14 days of the end of the tax month, so again, by the 19th of the tax month. Electronic filing doesn't extend the deadline to the 22nd, as happens with PAYE returns. The 19th is the deadline. If the returns are being submitted electronically, it would be sensible to do them before the 19th deadline in case there's problems with the contractor's computer or the revenue system. If the returns are being submitted manually by post, they should be posted early, preferably no later than the 15th of the month, to ensure that they arrive with the revenue on time. Again, it is astonishing the number of late filing penalties that have been charged by HMRC over the last 2.5 years, because contractors are simply not submitting the returns on time. Some contractors have made the mistake of using the wrong size envelopes and the wrong postage, and the returns have been delayed in the post and penalties have been imposed. So again, we really need to advise our clients to sort this out. File the returns early. Make sure they get there on time. The final point that I want to cover today is about employment status, because it is probably the major issue in the construction industry. I will start by saying that contractors are responsible for correctly working out the employment status of their workers, and the statutory declaration in the contractor's monthly return requires that contractors confirm that none of the individuals included on the return are employed under contracts of employment. There are penalties for non-submission, and if the return is incorrect, the cost, in addition to the penalties, may include the income tax and Class 1 national insurance that wasn't paid or deducted from the subcontractor. If any worker is an employee of the contractor, then he must be paid through the payroll. Now, very recently, HMRC has issued a consultation document on false self-employment in the construction industry. It is a 45-page document which needs to be studied, and it needs to be responded to, because this is one of the major issues for clients of AAT members. More of that is to come later. So, in summary now, this update tells us that the scheme is in its third year of operation. As far as HMRC is concerned, it's going quite well. The number of returns submitted by paper are dropping, and the number of returns being submitted online are increasing. There are still probably many too many late filing penalties because of the problems with contractors submitting on time, but even that is getting better than it was. We still find through AAT members that there are clients who have not registered when they should have been registered, and there is the problem for them with large penalties, which the revenue now say they're going to cap. So the important thing is to understand when the scheme applies to you or your clients and to operate it as best you can. Thank you for listening today.